All right, so I'm joined on the line here by Dr. John Wooten, the head of the Pontiac's Family Medicine Group, to talk about issues facing family doctors in the Pontiac region. Dr. Wooten, how's it going?
I'm fine, thank you.
So could you talk a little bit about the situation here in the Pontiac? We've heard a lot about doctors on the verge of retiring here, but what's the actual number of doctors that we have in the area?
We have actually quite a healthy number. It's 24, I think, at the moment, and there's two arriving. But the structural problem and that is creating the fact that there are still people without family doctors in the Pontiac is that a number of physicians 30 years ago all came at the same time. So they're reaching retirement age all about at the same time, and recruitment doesn't happen in bunches. Usually, so it takes a little while to catch up.
And so, what kind of numbers are we talking here? This cohort.
There's probably six. Two of them have retired already, Dr. Zhivkov and Dr. LaMarche, and a number, including myself, are not on the verge of retirement, but are all of the same age, and that will create some stresses to the system over the next few years.
And can you talk a little bit about how exactly doctors are sort of assigned to the region, or how they're recruited in the first place? Does that happen through the College of Collège de Médecine?
No, the college has an oversight over medical practice, but the government has in Quebec, and it's different in different provinces, but in Quebec, the government assigns the number of physicians each year that can go into a certain area, and they do that calculation on the basis of how many there are in relation to the population and try to even things out between areas that are in greater need than others. That translates for us into a permission to recruit two or three new physicians per year.
And so how, I guess, far in advance, do they know maybe like whatever, 2-3 years that this person's planning to retire a little bit down the road? And is there any kind of advanced planning in that regard, or is it just sort of reacting to when the retirements actually happen?
There is a governmental process where physicians can announce 2 years, if they know they're going to retire, they can announce 2 years before they retire that they're going to retire. And that allows their patients, if they wish, to join the list of patients who don't have family doctors, so that they have kind of a spot on that list should another physician be taking on new patients and their turn comes up. So that's used in some cases, but some cases the decision is made without as much forewarning as you'd like, and we have to deal with that.
And is this the same for GPs as it is for specialists as well?
I can't actually answer that because specialists generally don't have practices of their own.
Okay.
Tend to come and go, but they step into the role that their colleagues have without having a practice with patients assigned to them.
And what's the typical patient load for your average GP?
Again, in peripheral areas, that is very dependent on the roles the physician takes on. In rural areas like the Pontiac, the GPs wear many hats. They may work in the emergency department. They may work in, I just finished a week in the hospital. The more other hats that they wear, the smaller their caseload of patients in their office might be.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, a physician who does nothing but office may have 1,000 patients. A physician who does 3 or 4 different things, including obstetrics and emergency, may have 500.
And touching on that with the obstetrics, I understand there's been a lot of attention paid to the lack of nurses there at the hospital, but it's also a specialty that's required from doctors as well. There needs to be a certain amount, correct?
To run an efficient or a sustainable obstetrical practice from the medical point of view, you need at least four physicians to be supporting each other. When I first arrived here, there were probably 10 physicians that were doing obstetrics. That number dwindled over time. So to rebuild the service on the medical side, you need at least four, hopefully more.
And how many do we have currently?
There are probably four physicians that are participating in the reduced obstetrical footprint that we have now. With we are running obstetrical clinics, but not delivering the babies.
Okay. And so, how would a GP go about that as well? Is there the training offered? Do they come out of medical school knowing this stuff specifically, or?
So obstetrical training is part of a family physician's training in the 2 years of their family medicine residency, and they get exposed to it in medical school as well. A good proportion, not everybody, but a good proportion of physicians who plan to continue with obstetrics as part of their practice go on after their two-year family medicine residency to do an extra year exclusively in obstetrics. It's not the same training as an OBGYN, obstetrics gynecologist specialist, but it's been shown quite clearly in the literature that for low-risk obstetrics, GPs have as good, if not better, outcomes.
And just to go back to the doctors in rural areas wearing many hats, do you see that as a barrier to recruitment here? Or do you find doctors actually, or certain types of doctors coming out of medical school actually want a sort of a varied practice? They're doing all kinds of different stuff.
That's a very good question. The Society of Rural Physicians, whose conference is just starting in Ottawa this week.
Oh, yeah.
Has for years lobbied the universities to train family physicians to wear many hats because it's been known for a long time that in rural areas there isn't the population density for specialists other than some basic specialists to be present. So GPs, if the services are going to be offered, they have to do it. It's a barrier in the sense that not all family physicians come out of their training comfortable with rural practice. The more we train them in rural areas and we accept residents and students from McGill regularly here to do exactly that, the more they're comfortable when they finish their training. So we've recruited a number of physicians lately who have done their residency, a part of their residency training in the Pontiac, and enjoyed the practice and are challenged by it and have come back to work with us.
Interesting. And so do you see us being in good shape for when this cohort begins to retire here or continues retiring as well?
Well, a year ago I might have been more worried than I am now. I've seen a number of physicians arrive, and I'm hopeful that the more that come, the more that will come.
Similar to the initial cohort there, if they have a group around there the same age, you figure they'll be more inclined to stay if there's a group of sort of like-minded
Absolutely.
People?
Absolutely. If you see your peers working with you, you're much more comfortable than if you're joining something that you're the solo.
Well, that is encouraging. Do you have any idea what the wait list is or the number of Pontiacers that are currently waiting on a family doctor?
It's in the neighborhood of 2,000.
That's fairly significant. Do you know if it's gone up or down in recent years? Or
it's with the recent retirement of Dr. Zhivkov and Dr. LaMarche, it's gone up. It was down around 800 not too long ago.
So it's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed here in the near future for sure.
Absolutely, yes.
This is changing gears a little bit here, but we're in an election year now, and the provincial government has released a bit of a plan on to change the way certain things operate in the medical environment there to get more people a family doctor and that sort of thing. And from what I understand, they've changed the way doctors are paid. Can you have you kept up with this development here?
Yeah, they haven't done it yet. They're talking a lot about it. It's called capitation. And essentially, it would replace what is called fee-for-service, where physicians are paid according to what they do. This is not a new plan. It's been tried in many places. It's essentially what's being done in Ontario. Over the long haul, it does tend to get more people into the system. However, it requires that teams be in place to manage the care, because if you just add more patients to a static number of physicians, the math tells you that you reduce the time that they are able to spend with patients. And if you do that without a team-based approach, the quality of care could go down.
And so could you explain a little bit more about exactly how that works? So they're being paid per patient as opposed to being paid for, I guess, whatever service that they offer?
That's right. A lot of services are a mixed picture, so that there is a balance between the number of patients in a practice and the services that are provided. But in a capitation system, there may be an inducement to enroll as many patients as possible into the healthcare system and to share their care with other practitioners within a team.
And another thing that they mentioned in or had proposed here to change as well is to offer a phone line service that would, I guess, take some of the pressure off of frontline staff and sort of make it easier to direct people to services that they might need that might not necessarily require a doctor, such as a social worker or a nurse practitioner or something along those lines. Do you see that helping in this region in particular?
Well, it's in place.
Okay.
It's only been rolled out recently, and so not many people are familiar with it yet. My personal view is that this is a transitional step to capitation. Essentially, what the system does is it creates this team approach without the team being within the group of physicians. And it triages it before it gets to the practice, which is a little bit non-sustainable in the long term. I think everybody wants the same access to the service as everybody else, and that's the goal.
So, but by non-sustainable, you mean like sort of a Band-Aid solution?
Well, at the moment, I think Quebec society has clearly said it's not reasonable to have a million patients without family doctors, and I completely agree with that. It's similarly not ideal to have two groups of patients, one who has one kind of access to the system and one that has another kind of access to the system. So I think in the end, you want to work towards something that is equitable for everybody.
But do you think this will help in the short term here?
I think it'll help in the short term, yeah. I think it will direct people to the professional that can provide the services that they need. But I've heard that often people want to see their family doctor, and if they don't have one, this system doesn't actually provide one. It provides access to care without necessarily enrolling them with a family doctor.
And you said this is already available. Is it some kind of phone service? Where can people access this?
It's being offered to the highest priority patients in that waiting list. Patients are, when they sign up to the what's called the GAMF, which is the group of patients waiting for family doctors. The people with the highest medical need will get a letter saying this is how you access the service. I believe they have a plan for it to be rolled out to everybody on that list by September.
Dr. Wooten, we're just wrapping up here. I wanted to ask you, since you've been around the system here in the Pontiac for quite some time, you've witnessed quite a few changes over the years here. If you had a magic wand and you could change something about the system here or the way things operate in regards to family doctors, what would you change? What would be one thing that you would make different?
I think the creation of the family doctor teams is a good thing that I would keep. Integrating family doctors at all levels of care has been challenged by the centralization of healthcare, and I think I'm not the only peripheral area to complain about that. And I think I would bring back more local autonomy to allow the physicians to more fluidly move between the different levels of care and the different types of service.
And what does that mean on a practical basis? Or could you give an example there where more autonomy would be more useful?
At the moment, physicians who want to work in the emergency department and in the hospital have to deal with two different departments, and if they have any issues with their colleagues, they have to refer to a management system that is in Gatineau. That tends to cause problems to fester rather than getting solved.
So if there's a local manager or somebody handling those types of issues, you mean?
Yeah, I think the promised benefit of the centralization was to give the Pontiac better access to specialty services from the city. That hasn't really happened. And at the same time, it's not been easy for the physicians to maintain their many hats.
Dr. Wooten, I want to thank you for your time here. This has been an interesting conversation. I'll give you the last word here if there's anything that you wanted to mention or anything that we hadn't touched upon yet there.
I think the only thing I would say is that I think the population of the Pontiac actually has as good services in the periphery as any place in Quebec, and they should be proud of that. And the physicians who work in that system are proud to be part of it.